This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of October 26th, 2020, brought to you by the law firm Krieg DeVault. I'm Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. I want to bring up something that is close to my heart, and that's the creative arts. I am incredibly fortunate that I have the freedom to be creative in the context of what at least used to be an office job, but still with a salary, health insurance, and other benefits. But being a full-time artist, a performer, a visual artist, a writer, and sometimes all of the above, can be an incredibly difficult life. It is filled with uncertainty and risk, and even in the best of times, pretty meager earnings and nothing resembling benefits. A lot of the time, if you're doing it right, it means you have to hustle for every opportunity, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It is a calling, and unfortunately one with very little security. One of the cruelest aspects of the pandemic, at least from an economic perspective, is that it absolutely has clobbered artists and arts organizations. If you're involved in the performing arts, your venues completely shut down, at least for a while, and the collaborative, face-to-face creative process is still fraught with danger. If your work is displayed in galleries or other public spaces, your foot traffic right now is pretty sparse. Succeeding in the arts, in a lot of ways, is about establishing close relationships with other creative people, with patrons, and at least right now, there needs to be some built-in distance. The Arts Council of Indianapolis has been tracking the impact of the pandemic on the arts community since March and has launched several initiatives to support artists and arts and culture organizations. Very quickly out of the gate, it was able to raise nearly $500,000 to provide artists with emergency grants for essential living expenses like rent and food. It's now managing a $10 million fund for arts organizations that helps cover the expenses of getting back up to operating speed with the necessary safeguards for COVID-19. And now it's nearing the end of a campaign to raise $1 million for what it's calling the Keep Indie Creating Relief Fund, which would be another round of emergency grants, both for individual artists and arts and culture organizations. I thought this would be a great time to check in with both the Arts Council and a couple of artists for a more intimate understanding of what the arts community is going through right now. So this week, we will have a tidy panel of three guests. Here's our conversation. So joining me in the IBJ Podcast virtual studio today is Julie Goodman, President and CEO of the Arts Council of Indianapolis. Julie, thanks for making time today.
Thank you.
And we're joined by two local artists to talk about their experience of the pandemic. Rebecca Robinson is a visual artist with a background in fashion. Most recently, she worked on the Black Lives Matter mural downtown on Indiana Avenue and has been part of the Murals for Racial Justice Project. Rebecca, it is a pleasure to have you.
Thank you for having me.
And it's my pleasure to introduce Andrew Elliott, who is a classical musician and a wig and makeup artist. And you may have seen his work on social media during the pandemic with a series of images that got a lot of traction. Using himself as the canvas, he recreates the looks of iconic performers like Audrey Hepburn and Lucille Ball, David Bowie, Lady Gaga. His work recently appeared in the New York Times. Andrew, thank you for joining us.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
And Julie, let me quickly start with you. A lot of people and a lot of different sectors of the economy are struggling financially during the pandemic, but are artists particularly vulnerable? How so?
I think like so many industries, when the shutdown occurred, it was just an immediate evaporation of work. So across all of our live events industries, that has been the case, but our artists found themselves and our creatives found themselves in situations where they had, you know, gigs that were booked, that were canceled, shows that were canceled, seasons that were canceled, art fairs and festivals that were canceled. So it just was this unbelievably sudden and severe loss of income. And through the research that we've done and the surveys and the assessments, just to make sure we're listening and understanding the magnitude of impact to inform solutions and support, we know that about that resulted in about 30,000 closures and cancellations across our city since March.
And the thing that I gather is also usually very difficult about being an artist, especially an independent artist, is you are constantly having to hustle to find individual opportunities for income. You know, you don't sit in an office all day like I do and just do something you enjoy doing and then collect health insurance.
Right. No, it's massive. I mean, so before COVID, just to put the impact in context in our city, just the nonprofit sector of arts and culture in Indianapolis generates $440 million of economic impact annually, and it's 30,000 jobs. And we know about half of those are affiliated with organizations. So about 15,000, and then about 15,000 are independent artists. So, and we know 100% of our independent artists and many, many of those affiliated with organizations have been impacted by this.
What is the specific danger to the city when so many people in the creative arts can't make ends meet?
It's core to our economy. It's core to our culture, to our civic identity, to our quality of life. I think we've been missing and feeling what we're missing since March. But we've also seen our artists and arts and cultural partners almost immediately pivot and adjust and find ways to continue their work, to continue to inspire and help heal and connect us as a community. We had a lot of momentum in our arts and cultural community in Indianapolis before the pandemic. We were really in a growth mode with arts and culture and creatives in our community, and we don't want to lose that momentum. And I really believe that we won't. I believe, based on everything that's happening right now and what we're seeing and the innovation and resilience and collaboration that's happening, we will emerge from this stronger and even more equitable, more engaged as a creative community on the other side of this. We have a ways to go, though. We've got some rough months ahead, but that's what we're seeing.
Now, Andrew, let me ask you, so your professional expertise is in demand in several different ways, in different venues. You know, obviously in a lot of different ways in theater productions, but also, you know, for weddings, which have, you know, been put to the side of the road because of the pandemic, things like pageants. Can you give us a sense of what kinds of ways the pandemic has affected your ability to make a living?
Well, initially when, of course, in mid-March when the floor sort of fell out and everything started to cancel, and that first week or so was a pretty good picture of how varied my work is. I lost cello jobs. There were productions I was supposed to be playing cello for. I was slated to be designing for several productions, wigs and makeup. Those went away. I had a commercial job that was a three-day job that week that I was doing makeup for. That was canceled. They were hoping to go through with it, but that was canceled. And then weddings started to cancel. So it was all, everything kind of coming from each different direction began to go away. And then, of course, the stay-at-home orders were put in place, and makeup and hair were specifically and explicitly not allowed. They were not deemed essential services, of course, because they aren't. It's a literally superficial job that I do. But it's those then for a couple of months, I couldn't do it. I could, of course, work on myself in the safety of my own home, because who's going to stop me from doing that? But I wasn't able to then work on clients, which did, I mean, it became an issue, because until that point, there were still a few people who felt pretty safe. I mean, I have always been careful to be clean and fastidious about cleanliness and sanitation in my work. And so I didn't really have to pivot too much there. So my clients knew that and knew that about my work. And so they felt safe. But then once those orders were put in place and I wasn't able to work at all, then of course that made everything a bit tricky.
How have you had to make ends meet over the last several months? I mean, I've heard lots of, you know, stories about artists who've had to, that had to take retail, because actually a lot of artists already had to work in retail. I knew several who became contact tracers. What were the kind of strategies that you used?
Well, I was eventually able to collect unemployment. So I was grateful for that. Once that was passed, once Congress was able to pass the new provisions for freelancers, then I was able to collect that, which helped immensely. I would love to see that come back again. So many would. I don't, you know, have a lot of opinions about that. And then I took a couple of the the Arts Council grants. I was able to benefit from a couple of those grants, as I know so many friends were too. And those helped. Each little bit helps. My sister, she and her husband early on in the pandemic, they're like, hey, is there like one bill we can pay for you? And they paid a car bill. But mostly I'm fortunate my partner has continued to work. He's in real estate, so he's busier than ever, it seems. So I've had his support. I'm fortunate in that regard that I've not been panicked. I think I would be in a very different place, maybe not talking to you here right now, had it just been me going at it alone. Some work has come back. I mean, theater will not be back for a while, at least in the form with which we're familiar. But I've had some weddings. I've had commercial work come back slowly but surely. And then just personal, like private clients who want makeup done for whatever the reason might be, or wigs done, or styling work done. So it's coming back at a trickle, but it's coming back.
And Rebecca, let me turn to you. I mean, we say you're a visual artist, but you also, within that broad rubric, you do all kinds of things. Your work appears in galleries and exhibitions, high-profile public spaces, obviously, Indiana Avenue. And you've worked in fashion design and printmaking and photography, graphic design, film, even creative marketing. How did the pandemic affect you beginning in March?
Well, I have to say, as an artist, I've been working as an artist for a long time. And I think as an artist, it's finding your niche. And that's why I put my hands in so many things, because of my creativity. I don't like to put myself in a box. But I always had some type of employment to be able to sustain and to support, you know, being an artist. And, you know, when March came and I was getting the emails and the phone calls saying that things were being canceled, I pretty much panicked, because I thought, okay, I always had both, you know, the art and then had part-time income, but then both things were coming to an end. So I was really nervous. I wasn't sure what I was going to do, but it was important to me to just take that time to wrap my mind around what was going on, because no one knew the magnitude. You know, back in March, we felt kind of like, well, what's happening? And as it just kept getting worse. And then I personally had to take time to rest. I didn't realize how much I had overexhausted myself. I was really working myself to death. And so even though there's a lot of trauma that's been connected with, you know, what's going on throughout our country, throughout the world, there was also something good that came out of it. And I personally needed to take some time to rest and to think and to recharge. That would probably be the best way to put it.
You said that your artwork, or your work from art, was disappearing, but also the ways that you were using to supplement your income?
Yes. Well, just like Andrew said, I applied for the unemployment, and I was surprised I had some benefits left over from all those jobs that I've had in the past. And I was like, wow, you know, this could help. And that was one of the best things that could happen, because it allowed me to not panic as much and give me a little bit of cushion. And I think maybe early in May, that's when I got a couple of emails asking if I would like to participate in some things, you know, as far as once everything started to turn around, as far as being commissioned to do some murals and work with the city with some things. And I just wanted to get out and to help and to do something. It really wasn't about the financial side of it. I just needed some relief as a creative.
Do you have a sense of, I mean, if you wanted to compare your amount of revenue that you make from art to this time last year, I mean, how big of a hit have you taken?
I think I've made a lot more in the last, I say, 5 or 6 months that I have in the last couple of years. I mean, really. My artwork does pretty well, but this really set the bar for my value and what I, you know, the contribution that I have made to the city, and just with my experience and my expertise. Because I think as an artist, we're really hard on ourselves, and sometimes we undervalue our worth and our work. And I had to take a step back and say, you know, you've worked really hard, you know, you've gained the experience, and why not embrace that? So yes, I have made a lot more in revenue.
And so folks who aren't familiar with the work, it might be helpful to know, a major theme in your work is social justice. and also Black culture. Mm-hmm. And so have you found that, I mean, since those, you know, have gone so far to the front of the national conversation, that your work is in greater demand?
Absolutely. And what's awesome about that, I'm so proud to be able to create work that expresses my personal opinion about injustice and equality and unity. But it also opens doors for people to see that I'm more than just an artist, but I'm also a philanthropist. I love to give back. So now that people are Googling my name or checking out my work, I think the artwork is just that vessel to introduce people to Rebecca, but also say, wow, I didn't know that she also does this or is passionate about this. And I am so grateful, being an artist, that it's going to open up more dialogue and give more room for me to do even bigger work. I think I have so much more purpose than just the visual art. I just really want to make a difference.
Okay, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
The IBJ Podcast is brought to you by Creek DeVault, a trusted and dynamic law firm representing a wide variety of local, regional, and national clients. Committed to each other and to every client, Creek DeVault prides itself on integrity, professionalism, respect, and excellence. Financial institutions, global manufacturers, national healthcare providers, and successful organizations of all sizes and market focus rely on Creek DeVault to create innovative and successful business solutions. Connect today at www.creekdevault.com.
All right, we're back with this week's edition of the IBJ Podcast, and we're talking this week about the impact of the pandemic on the arts community in Indianapolis. I'm speaking with Julie Goodman of the Arts Council of Indianapolis, and artists Rebecca Robinson and Andrew Elliott.
Julie, is this pretty representational of what we're seeing from artists?
Absolutely. I think it's been this interesting kind of paradox. So at the same time that we have these closures and cancellations and evaporation of income and opportunity in some areas, other dimensions of our creative economy are growing and exploding as artists and art and the role of arts is valued and appreciated and needed. And so I think we've seen both. And really the generosity and engagement of our community. So that includes, you know, being willing to pay for virtual content, being able to, you know, pay for living room concerts by individual artists, streaming content that's coming out. People are willing to pay for that, to support artists and our organizations. And then, of course, this explosion of necessary work for advancing racial justice and social justice and creating opportunities for our Black artists in Indianapolis. We have amazing talent in our city. And I think it's just created a platform to help elevate those artists and their work and make those connections and build those relationships. That's all a positive of all of this, of course.
Now, explain to me in more detail how the relief fund will work. I mean, the goal is $1 million.
Right.
And it came kind of preloaded the way I read it.
Yes, we definitely have some support going in. So from March through June, we were able very quickly, thanks to the support of our philanthropic community and individual donors, we were able to raise $475,000 almost immediately in March, and that supported 950 relief grants. And then we pivoted to help artists and creatives navigate the unemployment benefits, and we had some other funds that we were administering to help organizations reopen and restart. But it became clear that we needed to consider a second phase of the relief fund work based on what we were hearing from artists through our surveys and conversations, but also appreciating that the unemployment had ended, the additional benefits had ended, and we were entering another gap period where we needed to provide some additional support. So we set this $1 million goal, and we currently have about $380,000 in commitments back from renewals from our philanthropic partners, but also more than 50 companies are contributing to the fund as a part of Restart with Art. Normally, they would be sponsoring tables at our Start with Art luncheon, but we've converted almost all of that into direct donations into the fund this year. So that's been wonderful to see. And then we also are including the city support. So the city came through with $500,000 of CARES Act allocation for organizational relief. So that $1 million is reflective and inclusive of the $500,000 from the city. And then we're working to raise another $500,000 to support those artist relief grants and some emergency grants for organizations. So we're getting close. We're going to go into the virtual benefit very, very close to about $900,000. And we need individual donations. And then we have a matching challenge from the Ephraimson Family Fund, and they're going to match individual donations up to $100,000. So we think we can get there.
Okay. So at the point that people are listening to this, which would be next week, you very well could be past $1 million.
Yes, I certainly hope so. Now, we do have the match, the Ephraimson Match Challenge extends through the end of the year. So we fully expect to be fundraising and doing individual fundraising from the virtual benefit through the end of December to be able to get to our goal.
One part that we haven't hit on quite as hard is the fact that the relief for the individual artists, there also will be money available for emergency operating expenses for arts and cultural organizations.
That's right. So the city relief fund helps very specifically with mortgage, rent, and utility relief based on the CARES Act eligibility. And then the individual relief grants will be continue to support basic needs. That's what we've heard from artists. We still need to provide help with mortgage and rent and utilities and healthcare costs and kind of those basic needs. And then we know that there are some organizations that we're getting into some danger zone in terms of just operational sustainability. So we'll be supporting that with grants as well.
So about half of it, about $500,000, would be pitched towards organizations. But the other half of it would be for individuals.
That's right.
And Andrew, you mentioned earlier that you had received a couple of grants. Was that the grant you're talking about, that earlier program?
Yeah, it was the initial Indie Arts, the Arts Council grant, and then the follow-up as well, which I had heard about through friends who had benefited. And of course, since I wasn't in as dire of a situation, I was hesitant to accept it, admittedly. I know many others, many friends who are in far more dire situations, but I had friends, those friends encouraged me nonetheless. Like, you are in the arts, you are unemployed, so why would you not take this money? And it really, it afforded a bit of peace of mind. It really helped afford that peace of mind to know some bills would be paid for, if not most, if not all, really. And that freed up that space too, to be able to then create. I mean, if I had been in a panic, if I had been spiraling in a depression, I wouldn't have wanted to create. I mean, that's the last moment you feel inspired to get up off the couch and do anything. So that money really afforded that peace of mind and freed my mind then to be able to share some joy and creativity with my friends.
Julie, there's one part of this I want to make sure I get. Was it in June that the Arts Council announced it was establishing the Indie Arts and Culture Restart and Resilience Fund?
That's right. Yes. So that is a $10 million fund that is made possible by Lilly Endowment. And that is specifically to help arts and cultural organizations with the unanticipated extraordinary costs that they have to reopen and reopen safely, to restart their operations, and also to adjust. A lot of them have to remodel their operational models and physically, literally do some remodeling. So we had identified that as a need through our early assessments. There are at least $20 million in these unanticipated extraordinary expenses facing our sector on top of losses averaging about $8.6 million a month. So that fund is designed to really help stabilize the sector and provide that support needed to reopen safely. And so that's been incredible. The state has provided some very meaningful support in terms of CARES Act funding as well. We're very, very grateful for the support from the community. It's made all the difference.
So the organizational support in the relief fund is covering something slightly different.
That's right. Yes. That's, so there's still you know, with $8.6 million in losses that our organizations are facing, I mean, they've had to also take advantage of all of the PPP loans, and there have been other NEA grants and other CARES Act funding through the state that has really, really helped. But there was a big gap.
And Andrew and Rebecca, I want to pick up on something I think that you both voiced in one way or another, is that there, in some ways, was an unexpected dividend from the pandemic. I mean, I don't mean to in any way put a smiley face on a once-in-a-lifetime public health crisis, but you know, artists often say there's a silver lining in great misfortune, and that sometimes it gives you material, sometimes it gives you just space to create, or you know, space, as Rebecca said, to rest. Does that ring a bell? I know, Rebecca, you'd hit on that already a little bit.
Oh, I share that sentiment entirely. I admit to being a workaholic, part of which is because I'm fortunate to love most of the work I do. But all of my income is from the creative realm, which is a gift. I mean, that's a wonderful thing. But because of that, it's hard to delineate what might be work and what might others call hobby. So I don't have hobbies per se. It all falls under the same umbrella. So I am a workaholic when I am working. I was not taking great care of myself. I had fallen out of a workout routine. I was eating on the go. I was not seeing my loved ones as much as I should. I was really devoting most of my time to art, which is a wonderful thing. But when I'm no longer have that option to go work 12 hours every day, it really refocuses your priorities. And I miss it. Of course, I miss working that much and that creativity, but I know now that I will return to it in whatever form it takes. When I return, I will return to it, making a point to take better care of myself and those around me. So that's the silver lining there, and that forced rest. I mean, it really was, like Rebecca said, it's like, oh God, I am tired. I work a lot. And you forget when you're on the go, you have that momentum going until you're forced to stop. You don't really realize it. So that's, I mean, that's a bit of the silver lining. And then also the time that it has afforded me to really, as she said too, focus on what brings me the most joy, because I feel like whatever brings me the most joy and helps me feel the most authentic will translate through my art. And it has. I mean, I've had great response in just these short few months with what I've shared, because I feel like not only is the work good, but people can really see me through the work. They're seeing who I'm choosing and why that choice maybe is important to me, and the joy or the silliness or even a bit of the sorrow that comes through each character is pretty relatable for each and every person. And I think I've been able to return to a bit of authenticity with the time that this has afforded.
Rebecca, did you have any other thoughts about that?
Yeah, I have to agree with Andrew. Self-care is so important. And I think I've definitely taken time to rest and to recharge. And I believe I've created some of my best work in the last 6 months. I'm just really proud of the direction that the city is going. I'm so glad that people are taking notice to the arts, because arts encompass everything. And some people think it's just limited to certain things, but it's very important. A city thrives on the arts and culture, and we have to stick together and keep things going. So I'm just really proud of the Arts Council and everyone that is, you know, rallying together.
So that's a great note to end on, I think. Thank you guys so much. This has really been eye-opening for me.
Thank you for having us.
My thanks again to our panel this week, Julie Goodman, Rebecca Robinson, and Andrew Elliott. If you're interested in making a donation to the Relief Fund, go to indiekeepscreating.org. And before you get on with the rest of your week, I want to point you toward a few strong stories in this week's edition of IBJ. As the world holds its breath while drug makers rush vaccine candidates for COVID-19 through development, an Indiana-based startup is planning to launch a $60 million drug manufacturing plant in Fishers that can help pharmaceutical companies get new products to market faster. Kirk Christian explains how INCOG is planning to seize on the new urgency for developing and manufacturing drugs. Also in this week's issue, Lindsay Air Doty identifies the top campaign donors for Indiana's three gubernatorial candidates. And IBJ honors and profiles the winner of this year's Michael A. Carroll Award, Teresa Lubbers, former state senator and longtime commissioner of the Indiana Commission for Higher Education. Congratulations, Teresa. You can read these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ, or, of course, online at ibj.com. Now, I'm not going to lie to you, it's quite a bit easier to access all of IBJ's nearly bottomless trove of stories and statistics about Central Indiana's business community and economy if you're a subscriber. It works out to about $2 per week for authoritative and actionable information that you are not going to find anywhere else. So please just go to ibj.com, click on the subscribe button. Thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. It's almost November 3rd, and we'll be back again November 2nd. So we'll see you then. Take care.